south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Today, let's start by telling a few stories. True life stories, usually without a moral, involving expats in Latin America, of course. I get a lot of emails from people saying, Johnny, we do like it when you give us facts and figures and stuff about Latin America, but mix it in with a few stories, will you? To which I say, no problem. Like the schnoz Jimmy Durante used to say, stories? I got a million of them. Of course, that dates me, right? Anyway, first, let me start out by telling you that when I did the last show, I neglected to mention that right about 15 minutes in, there was a 5.2 earthquake that hit right in the middle of a sentence. Now, how I could have overlooked telling you about that at the time? Well, it's because, like I said in so many shows, you get a lot of little earthquakes down here. Most of them you don't even feel, and often, the next day you wake up and look at the TV or read the paper and you see there was a 4 or a 5 and you don't even remember it because you just didn't feel it. Normally, most people can't even feel a 2 or a 3, and if you're walking around or you're driving in a car, you can't even feel a 4 or a 5 sometimes. But if you're in a chair or a bed or you're sitting quietly somewhere and a 4 or 5 hits, you're going to feel it. And by the way, as expat Eddie says, the best way to experience a small earthquake, in fact, some gringos come down and they expect it, so when they've been down and there isn't one, they're kind of disappointed. Think of how you'd feel if you went to a well-known active volcano site and it was a cloudy day. Anyway, expat Eddie always says the best way to experience a small earthquake, a 2 or a 3, those subtle ones that most people might not feel, but they happen quite frequently down here. Anyway, he says he's felt quite a number of 2s and 3s, get this now, while sitting on the toilet seat. Now, don't laugh. There's some scientific basis in fact to what he says. Toilet seats are well bolted down to the floor, and down here in Latin America, since they don't have wooden floors, it's all in concrete, which is a nice, solid base to the ground. Now, remember, if you're standing, you've got the soft rubber soles of your shoes to insulate you from vibration, and if you're sitting in a chair, there's some cushion to insulate you from the vibration of the earth there, too. It's got some padding. Expat Eddie says, and don't laugh, he says a toilet's like a kind of a butt stethoscope. And carrying that thought a bit farther, and I don't know if we should, actually, but I will anyway. Expat Eddie goes on to say, it stands to reason then that backpackers are the tourists that feel the vast majority of small earthquakes, since they tend to eat that cheap, contaminated food on the street and are always flirting with Montezuma's revenge. Makes sense, huh? That said, jumping out of the septic tank and into the gutter, let's move on. Now, you know, a 5.2 earthquake anyone can feel, and this one lasted about 30 seconds. And here's what I've noticed over the years. Anything between a 3 and a 5, you generally don't notice anything rattling in the house. You can feel it a little bit, and occasionally the dogs will start barking in the neighborhood, etc. Anyway, if you're in a nicely built, modern, anti-seismic building or house, nothing under a 5 will make things shake, rattle, and roll unless you've got some glass ticky-tacky things around the house and on the shelves, you know, Hummels and glass plates and things. Stuff, you know, that older folks like my grandma and yours tend to accumulate in vast quantities. So yes, if there's a 4 or 5 earthquake at grandma's house, some of her glass angels and hoot owls will hit the floor and she'll be sad, but you won't. Good thing she lives in Cleveland, right? But anyway, that 5.2 last week just started rattling the glass in the place I was in. And you know, the real stress that comes along with a shaker like that is not in the moment. It's all about what's going to happen next, because many times within a few minutes or even up to an hour or two later, you do have perceptible aftershocks. However, the good news is that they're almost always a lot smaller than the first one. So then should a 5 or even a 6-pointer worry you? Nope. Unless you happen to be visiting someone out in the boonies who lives in an adobe house, those things are crumbling death traps during an earthquake. As you probably know, adobe construction is basically bricks and mud mortar, with no metal reinforcement at all, totally against code, which has never stopped a poor family from building in that style. But do note, the only good thing about adobe is that once your house falls down or cracks in half during an earthquake, you can rebuild it in about 3 weeks. So you don't want to be in an adobe structure during an earthquake, and you don't want to be in a lower middle class or poor neighborhood where all structures have tin roofs and wooden walls. Because, you see, in poor neighborhoods like that, no one, and I mean no one, has ever heard of anti-seismic construction. In fact, the word seismic or anti-seismic are totally foreign concepts. You might as well be talking about Rolexes and Ferraris. I mean, come on, these are families that make between $200 and $400 a month. And speaking of Ferraris and Rolexes, yesterday, once again, I took a little diversionary trip to one of the local carnivals that just came through town. Now, these carnivals that come through big cities in Latin America can be tiny little things with three or four tacky rides, or big, gigantic, full-scale midways that are 10 or 20 blocks square. And personally, I go to these things about as much as I go to a bowling alley, about once every couple years. But this one I went to yesterday had some terribly scary and impressive rides. Unlike so many other amusement parks I've seen in Latin America that look like the rides are out of the 1970s or 80s, brought down directly from the States after they've outlived their usefulness, kind of like the amusement park ride version of a chicken bus. In other words, jumping on one of these rides would not be a very comforting thought to an expat or a gringo. I mean, come on, who wants to be 40 feet up in the air, flipping around on a 30-year-old piece of rusted junk? However, in this case, all the rides in this amusement park seem to be very modern, quite new, and not really junk at all. Now, that said, don't ask me about the maintenance, because, you know, this is Latin America. Now, expat Eddie, who by the grace of Buddha could have been a carny himself in a past life, Eddie says the maintenance issue or lack of it makes going on one of these things all the more tempting for the adventurous. But, you know, being an engineer myself in a past life, and having made some lifelong friends in the nerdy engineering world, I actually have an old engineering friend who worked on amusement park rides up in the States. And his specialty? Roller coaster design. In fact, he's had his hand in some of the big monsters at Six Flags, Palisades Park, and Knott's Berry Farm. He told me that when they build these rides, they over-design the structural supports, etc., by about 400%. That's four times what they need to be. Kind of like airplane manufacturers like Boeing and Lockheed, they do the same thing, about 400% overkill. Good to know, right? So, like expat Eddie says, you have to look at it like this. If, for example, every 6 months there's got to be a big maintenance check on one of these rides like a roller coaster, meaning up in the States where they'll actually do those kind of checks and inspections. And once one of these big rides gets down to Latin America, if, optimistically speaking, the maintenance only gets done about a quarter of the time. Still, if these things are manufactured to 400% overkill, chances are absolutely nothing's going to happen to you as a passenger. And the proof of the pudding is just to look and see how old the cars are running on the roads down here, and to think that cars that are 10, 15, 20, 30, even 40 years old are still somehow chugging along. Some of them looking so bombed out on the outside, chicken wired together and duct taped. Still, oftentimes on the open highway, one of those junks will pass you at 90 miles an hour. And remember, down here, after a car is, let's say, 5 years old, no one, and I mean no one's following the maintenance schedule. In fact, the only people that ever do are people who buy brand new cars, who are advised when they first pick up the car that they really should follow the maintenance schedule, and they hand them a book with little coupons in it for the usual checkup sequences. But since down here in Latin America, people make so much less money than the average first world person, if they can pull off the financing on a new car, they never figure in any extra dough for the routine maintenance checkups. Soon enough, after they've brought their cars in two or three times for that routine maintenance check, and see that even a routine checkup with an oil change is $100 or so, it doesn't take long for them to give up on the dealership and never bring it back again. And how do I know that? Because I've been to a few of these dealerships to get parts and stuff myself, and I've talked to some of these maintenance mechanic guys. In fact, one guy told me going to the dealership down here is like going to the dentist. Nobody makes an appointment until there's a minor catastrophe. That's why when you walk into a dealership like a Honda or Kia or Mitsubishi or whatever, you'll notice that most all of the cars that are in for routine maintenance are new or light new. And note, when you walk by the lounge where owners sit waiting to pick up their cars, you're looking at the uppity 1 to 3% of Latin Americans who make enough money so that they really don't care about the cost of things. And note that when you're in a place like a Toyota dealership, the only short, brown, common-looking people you'll see are the people working there and the maids and the drivers and the bodyguards that have accompanied their owners to pick up their cars. But where was I? Oh yeah, I was at the amusement park. And once again, as you pull up to park in the lot that's next to the amusement park, you'll see all sorts of lower, middle class, and poor people mulling around having a good time, just waiting to get in, I guess, with a certain high percentage of them never intending to go in at all because they can't afford the entrance fee. Kind of like sitting outside the entrance to a baseball or football game, knowing you don't have the money to get in, but enjoying the excitement and the rush of the crowd and the activity. And note, unlike amusement parks up in the States that I remember back in Chicago, here in Latin America, they have a cover charge that keeps those lower middle class and poor people from actually coming into the park itself. Because you see, with a whopping 50 cent cover charge, that keeps out the riffraff, or I should say, keeps them mulling around in the parking lot and outside of the park itself. In fact, I noticed yesterday there were more people outside the park than there were actually inside. All, of course, having a damn good time and all seemingly quite happy, as most people are here in Latin America. What else? Oh yeah, I noticed right away again that I was the tallest guy in the whole place. I mean, I'm 6 foot tall, and there was maybe 1,000 to 2,000 people outside and in, yet there I was, the tallest person there, and the only gringo in the whole place. So how do you like that? Well, I like it. I like being the only gringo. I mean, I see what's happening out of the corner of my eye. They're looking at me like I'm James Bond or Brad Pitt or something, even though I look more like Mark Zuckerberg. No, I'm not that ugly, but you get the idea. I don't mean to say they're making a big deal out of it or whispering to each other, but it's like Eddie says, and he knows exactly what I'm talking about. He lives in El Salvador, and there are very few gringos in El Salvador. He told me it's like being a perpetual loser at the Indy 500. Like Eddie said, it doesn't matter if you lose, you still have a cool uniform, a fantastic car, and everyone wants to invite you to parties and buy you drinks. Even though no one remembers your name, they still want to hang with you. That's why, once you get used to it, you just gotta love being off the gringo tourist trail. And it's true, if you ever wondered what it's like being a kind of a B-grade VIP, that's VIP down here in Latin America, you know. VIP. VIP. You heard me talk about that on a past show, I'm sure. Well, just know that if you're up in Cleveland or Schenectady and you live kind of a dull, mundane life, and you never got to be a cheerleader or prom queen or captain of the football team, first string anything, all you have to do is come on down here to Latin America and live off the gringo tourist trail. And believe me, sooner or later, like it or not, you'll get a little taste of what it's like. But unfortunately, 99.9% of all gringos who come down here on a trip to Latin America, they go to the tourist spots, Costa Rica, Panama, Cancun, Playa del Carmen, etc. Fact is, I did that trip myself for 3 or 4 years, but I found out that life is 1,000 times better off the gringo tourist trail, and twice or even 3 times less expensive. So then everybody asked me, how do you maneuver your way around places that are off the gringo tourist trail? How do you settle in and work it out, especially if your Spanish sucks? Well, if you haven't got your plan B in motion already, you really should try to come down to my Expat Wisdom Seminar coming up this January. 6 days and 6 nights with classes in the morning and boots on the ground in the afternoons and evenings. It's a little less than 2 months away and we're over half filled already, so do go to www.expatwisdom.com, click on the seminar link and get the full details. Come on down and find out what it's like to live a first world lifestyle on a measly Social Security check. Yes, and you will meet expats down here who are doing just that. So again, it's www.expatwisdom.com. Meanwhile, back at the carnival, I was telling you that at the carnival, not only was I the tallest person there out of about 1,000 to 2,000 people, I was the only gringo. Now, let me point out something for all of you guys and gals up there in the States familiar with carnivals. You know, they're a dying thing. People just don't go anymore. They got too many other things to do. You know, 300 channels of television, internet, Facebook, all that garbage. But down here in Latin America, it's a whole different matter. Now, I'm not saying you're going to see the upper classes go to these carnivals, though I did see in the parking lot some Range Rovers and some Porsche Cayennes manned by the usual 5'4" bodyguards in badly fitting suits, etc. Because, you know, kids of the wealthy want to go to these carnivals, too. I mean, come on, what are your bodyguards for if you can't stick them right in the face of the lower classes, you know? Which is why the upper classes down here are basically dyed-in-the-wool pompous-ass jerks. But I digress. You see, one of the other things that makes these amusement park carnivals so popular down here is that that's where young, lower middle and middle class teenage girls go to show off their fashion sense and style as they perceive it, and of course, their new high-heeled stilettos they've been saving for the event. Because remember, these girls are short. Yes, you heard right. High heels at a dirt lot carnival. Ah yes, the price we pay for beauty, huh? It becomes a kind of a stage for adolescent girl competition. Even though these days, 200 and 300 channel cable TV has come to Latin America, even smartphones and Facebook and Twitter, there really is no substitute for lower and middle class girls to show off their style and fashion than in person when the carnival comes to town. Now, according to one group of young Latin guys I spoke to yesterday, they said the two very best places for young adolescent guys to check out young adolescent girls, in person that is, not on Facebook, is at amusement parks and at church. And not, get this, at school, because in Latin America, schoolgirls and guys wear uniforms all the way up through high school, which makes it virtually impossible for young Latin girls to show off their clothes and their style, etc. Now, changing gears a bit, for all you people out there who like drinking cocoa water, I'm here to report that if you're on the coast anywhere in Latin America, you can buy fresh coconuts for anywhere from 10 to 25 cents each. And each one will give you about a half a liter, 500 milliliters, of coconut water. But you see, here's the problem. You can buy the coconuts all you want and store them in the trunk of your car or in your house somewhere, but how do you get that water out of there without causing a huge mess? I mean, let's face it, we are inexperienced gringos and expats. That is, inexperienced in the art of machetes, which is the preferred method to crack these things open. And even though you might have a machete or two laying in the garden shed, I don't recommend you go out and start practicing with one, even if on a stump in the backyard. Because, you know, the fact is, even 6, 7, and 8-year-old Latin folks, guys and girls alike, can use a machete like you can use a TV remote. If you ask any one of those teenagers, kids, or even an adult to show you the particular scars and war wounds they obtained on their way to becoming a crack machete user, every Latin will gladly show you his or her scars. The mentionable ones, that is. So all these guys and girls down here became experts at the machete by making a few mistakes. And the same thing's bound to happen to you. So, if you want to keep all your appendages, the mentionables and the unmentionables, leave the machete to the gardener. But here's a tip. You know those big square meat cleavers? If you pick up one of those and keep a kind of a dull edge on it, those things are just perfect for slicing up coconuts. Now, note when you buy coconuts, normally the guy or gal at the stand will slice it open for you. But 90% of the time you want to take it home or take it with you and have it another time. And by the way, a coconut that's not tapped into can last a month or even more. But when tapped, once the air hits the inside of the shell and the water, coconut water will start tasting a little sour and a little bitter after about a day. So you have to pretty much plan on drinking it the day you open it. Although I know some people who pour it into a container and stick it in the refrigerator, and it could last 2 or 3 days, but I wouldn't count on it. So anyway, when buying whole coconuts, here's what you should do. Tell the guy or girl to take a whack with his machete and make a flat spot on that coconut so it'll be stable and not roll off the table when you want to tap it. Well, what do you know? A poet and didn't know it. So then you might ask, what's the top and what's the bottom of a coconut? We'll get to that in a second. Now, of course, down here you can buy the little brown coconut with the husk peeled off, but I wouldn't recommend that. Buy the whole coconut, not just the central nut. Whole coconuts with the husk will stay fresh much longer. But, as you know, with the husk, it's a hell of a lot of work to peel it down, unless you have someone around the house who knows how to wield a machete. Anyway, when you buy the coconut, you get the guy to put a flat spot on it. That'll be the bottom. Let him decide where to make that cut. He knows best. And if you want, have him put a flat spot on the top of the coconut, too, the part that you're eventually going to punch a hole in and drink from. So then, since you're not going to use a machete, how do you get the water out? Well, like I said, you get one of those big meat cleavers, and you take the coconut outside. Don't try this indoors because it's way too messy. Without a doubt, you'll get pieces of husk everywhere. You should do it on bare ground or over a 2x4 or some heavy piece of wood, because you will miss now and again with that cleaver, and you don't want to hit cement. You want to hit wood or dirt. Anyway, you hack at it a few times till you start seeing the white meat part of the coconut and you stop. Now, the white meat of the coconut's about a quarter to a half inch thick, so if you can cut it down till you just start skimming that white part, you can put that coconut in a refrigerator or leave it out on the counter somewhere for a couple of days, up to a week. Now, when you want to drink the water, then you just punch a hole with a little knife or the end of a fork. It'll go right through quite easily and stick your straw in there and you're all set. Now, that all might sound easy, but believe me, the first few times you try it, it won't be. It really is worth it in the end. And every once in a while, you'll get a coconut that's just so tasty that on a 1 to 10, it's a 10. Whereas with that bottled and pasteurized coconut water that everybody's used to buying up in the States, for 10 times the price, I might add, I don't think I've ever tasted bottled coconut water that's been over a 7. Of course, you have to have tasted a coconut when it's freshly cut open before you can even make that comparison. That said, there's a faster, better, safer, some say, method to get the water out of a coconut without causing a huge mess by frantically hacking away at the husk. What you do is you buy a raw coconut. You don't even have to have the guy cut a flat bottom on it, but it's still a good idea. That way your coconut won't walk around the table or even fall off and land on your foot. By the way, for any of you who've Skyped or mumbled with me, you might have recognized I never use a camera so no one can see my ugly mug. But I did for a while have an icon or an avatar up there, a photograph I took of a very cool sign that said, "Beware of coconuts." It was posted at a very nice resort around a pool that was just surrounded by coconut palms. A tremendous resort, I might add, for about $45 a night, completely off the Gringo Tourist Trail. Again, yet another great reason to stay off the Gringo Tourist Trail when at all possible. Anyway, that sign said it all. A simple artist sketch of a bunch of coconut palms just loaded with coconuts, with a couple of stick people depicted under the tree, just about ready to get bombarded. And the caption said, "Beware of falling coconuts," in Spanish, of course. The first time you see a sign like that, you do laugh. But it's there for a reason, even though there's no one to sue. This is Latin America, you know. So, as I was sitting around the pool, every so often you did hear a thunk. A coconut falling, of course. Anyway, when I looked it up later, I found that over 200 people a year worldwide are killed by falling coconuts. Anyway, bottom line, you don't want one of these things falling on your head or your foot. Where was I? Oh, yeah, to this simple method of getting the coconut water out. Well, whether you have a flat spot or not on your coconut, just take a power drill, stabilize your coconut, which is why you want a flat spot, by the way. Drill a 3/8 inch hole in that coconut. Now, if you drill a 1/4 inch hole, even though the straw should fit, it usually doesn't because the little fibers from the coconut husk will twist and clog up the edges of the hole. And if you drill a 1/2 inch hole, it's too big, and often a big diameter bit like that can start walking and slipping on you, and that could be dangerous too. So, I found by hook and crook, a 3/8 inch bit is perfect. And I found out that it's best not to transfer the coconut water from the coconut itself. Better to drink it from a straw right from the coconut. That's even if it's one of those coconuts that's got so much water you can't finish it at one sitting. Sometimes you'll get a massive amount of coconut water, up to a liter, double what you'd normally get. And some of the time you'll get less than the usual half a liter. You just never know, even by shaking the coconut beforehand. Now, there's an opportunity for an expat invention. A device that can tell you how much water there is in a coconut before you buy the thing. Not really a difficult problem for your average engineer type. There's a thought for you. So anyway, you pays your money and you takes your chances. Now note, there are lots of different kinds of coconuts, but throughout Latin America anyway, there are generally two types that are sold. And they both look quite a bit different. One has a kind of a shiny, leafy green exterior. And the other has a outside surface that's more brownish and dry. Now, the one with the outer green coating on it has a lot more coconut water with a lot less of the meaty white stuff we all know from up north as coconut. And the coconut with the browner, kind of drier outside layer on it generally has less coconut water and a little bit more of the white coconut stuff. But there's another thing that most people don't know. Once you've broken one of those things open, after you've sucked the water out, of course, there's about an eighth inch of a gummy, semi-transparent stuff that's clinging to the inside of the white meat of the coconut. Some say it looks like rubber cement, and others, who are a bit more earthy like expat Eddie, call it coconut snot. Now, don't let that deter you, because some Latins down here look at that particular part of the coconut, that little spoonful or two that you get from certain coconuts, as a delicacy. So, like I said, don't let that deter you from trying it. Which reminds me, there was one kid in my grade school class, and I think there's one in everyone's grade school class, that didn't mind eating his, well, we won't go there. And why is it, for all the years you went to school and all the kids you ran into over your life, you remember the name of that guy? In this case, Jim Zach. So Zach, if you're out there now, your secret's out, and I hope you got over it, but if not, do try the more socially acceptable coconut snot. You'll live longer. And maybe even find a girlfriend. And here's something I'm sure you didn't know. Dogs absolutely love the coconut meat right out of the coconut. In fact, after you've drunk the water, crack it in half on cement outside on a concrete street or curb, of course. Then give those remaining two halves of the coconut to your dog. Without scraping the coconut out at all, give it to him whole, and your dog or dogs will spend a half a day digging out that white meat. In time, they'll get out every last little white morsel, and it's great for their teeth and their health. What you probably don't know is that dogs on dry kibble dog food have a lot of plaque buildup and don't have very healthy gums and teeth because they don't get the necessary hard, stiff stimulation to the gums, etc., that comes from chewing things in a wild, natural diet, which they don't have. Look, we have soft diets too, but we use toothbrushes. Vets down here say coconuts are good for dogs, but also note that when you first give them a coconut, there might be some blood on the coconut, and you'll go, oh no, that's bad for my dog, but actually it tells you that your dog has unhealthy gums. After a time, that blood will disappear when the gums get healthy again. It's like the first couple of time a person flosses and gets some blood. Well, the blood is a sign of unhealthy gums, and if you continue flossing after a while, the blood stops. But do note that in time your dog will play with that coconut until there's shrapnel everywhere.
South of the border, down Mexico.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture in old